The First Amendment Foundation presents a virtual event exposing Epstein's evils, an evening with Julie K. Brown and Emily Michaud. The reporter and photojournalist will discuss how they uncovered the Jeffrey Epstein story, shining a light on the international extent of his crimes and giving a voice to dozens of victims who had been denied justice. It's December 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at floridafaf.org. Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, we're going to talk with those folks who did the expeditions across Florida, exploring backwoods Florida, the waterways and undeveloped land in Florida that is threatened by development. The Wildlife Corridor Project people will be along in just a moment. They've got a new film out, and it's going to be shown locally. They'll talk about that toward the end of the program. And as we listen back to this interview, which originally aired on Florida This Week, please comment about what you're hearing. You can send your comment to dj@wmnf.org. And here is Florida This Week and the interview with the Florida Wildlife Corridor people. Coming up next, 3 out of every 4 Floridians live on or near the coasts, and many people never see Florida's fantastic interior. Much of that interior, the lakes, the rivers, the springs, wetlands, forests, and grasslands, are still undeveloped. But it's changing because people continue to move here, about 1,000 newcomers every day. The Florida Wildlife Corridor is a proposal to create a statewide network of land and water that supports wildlife and the people who make their living in the still undeveloped parts of the state. In the past decade, 3 friends set out to explore and highlight this beautiful and vanishing part of Florida. That trekking team joins us now, conservationist and photographer Carlton Ward Jr., 7th-generation Floridian and conservationist Mallory Likes Dimmitt, and wildlife biologist and survey coordinator Joe Guthrie. We'll show you where they've been and take you along for the journey. That's next on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. Florida is one of the fastest growing states in the nation, largely because of our outstanding climate and our natural beauty. However, the very things that draw people to the state are also being threatened. The Florida Wildlife Corridor is a project designed by our guests to protect Florida's natural areas by combining science with compelling storytelling and expeditions. A series of documentaries made during the past decade have taken viewers along. Joining us are Carlton Ward Jr. He's a conservation photographer and author from Tampa. He co-led the Florida Wildlife Corridor expeditions. Mallory Likes Dimmitt is a 7th-generation Floridian. She has a bachelor's in natural resources and a master's in environmental management. And joining us a little later in the program, Joe Guthrie, a survey coordinator and wildlife biologist who's also taking part in the trekking team. And Carlton and Mallory, great to see you. Thank you for coming on Florida This Week.
Thanks for having us.
So whose idea was it to do these treks across Florida?
Well, Carlton, I'll let you answer that. It's really your brainchild.
I think, yeah, the idea to do these treks is inspired by a group of black bears in Highlands County. And it was the research that Joe Guthrie and colleagues were doing where these bears in their wide landscape movements showed us how much of a wildlife corridor still exists in our state and inspired the idea of trying to bring attention to it through a series of expeditions. So we got started on that in the planning phases as far back as 2010. And in 2012, we went 100 days and 1,000 miles from the Everglades in the southern tip all the way to the Okefenokee Swamp in Georgia to show that this wildlife corridor is still here, still exists, and still has a chance to endure for the future.
And your hope is to protect corridors so that animals like the black bear and the panther have a place to roam and breed and continue living here in the Sunshine State.
Absolutely. And that quality of life that you referred to at the beginning for why people move to Florida is also something that we can protect while we protect the green infrastructure that supports, you know, everyone who lives and visits Florida. So it's both a home for nature and people, and ensuring that continues for the future.
Let's show a clip from your 2018 documentary, The Last Green Thread. And Carlton, could I just ask you where the last green thread is here in Florida before we start the video?
This particular journey started in the headwaters of the Everglades, just south of Orlando, and it traversed a bottleneck in the wildlife corridor across Interstate 4 over to the Green Swamp to the north and to the west. So this was uniting these two very significant watersheds in our state and drawing attention to a real pinch point where there's a chance of the statewide connection being snuffed out in that area if we don't really get purposeful about protecting it.
Let's take a look at the trailer.
This track is basically unknown.
In the night when my body slept in my bed, my mind was running through the woods instead.
Right here.
100 miles an hour in the fast lane. 100 miles an hour toward the light.
What makes this so cool is really being explorers again.
See the curve in that river's bed. Now look at you when I see my friend.
We know the boundaries of this green ribbon, but there's not a hiking trail, there's not a paddling trail.
100 miles an hour to the air.
It's going to be a suffer fest for a few days.
Holy f***.
I can't think of any better people to suffer with.
Mallory, that's just amazingly beautiful. But did you ever think as you're walking during one of these treks that, did you ever say to yourself, what the heck am I doing out here as you're going through some of those untraveled parts of Florida?
Many times, and at least once a day, I would say that. And on that trek, several times on a couple of days. You know, when you don't have a trail to follow, the going is really slow. And in kind of a dense swamp, the going is also maybe not perfectly straight. So we circled around for a while and took a lot of hours to make a few miles on some of those initial days on that trek.
Because it's not like the Appalachian Trail where the trail is clearly marked. You've got to make it yourself. Carlton, let me ask you about what threatens the last green thread there in this area between the Green Swamp just north of Tampa and the area near Orlando?
Well, you know, I'll start by generally saying that all of, you know, the whole wildlife corridor throughout the state can be seen as a last green thread, much wider in some areas than others. And the biggest threat to their persistence is lack of adequate public investment for land conservation, because most of the unprotected pieces of this corridor are working lands, and those working lands are quickly transitioning to rooftops. And we saw that firsthand on the last Green Thread expedition. Once we were able to cross under Interstate 4 on protected land, that landscape between Disney World and Lake Louisa State Park in the Green Swamp, you can almost see the orange groves transitioning into housing developments. And the, I guess, lack of adequate planning for wildlife corridors and agricultural corridors from the beginning makes it really hard to play catch up in some of these areas and save those connections.
So we do have money for land conservation here in Florida. Is that being used to protect these wildlife corridors, the project that you're working on?
It is. And this year, there's been a number of actually really exciting acquisitions to help protect significant parts of the Florida Wildlife Corridor. One of those was the Bluffs of St. Teresa near Tallahassee this year, that it goes into protected status, and that we trekked across in 2015 expedition. So it's really exciting to see the continued progress towards protecting the Florida Wildlife Corridor. And the challenge is also to sort of keep up with the continued growth and find the right balance between those two.
Carlton, we're seeing some photos here. Some of these, I believe, are yours. You're one of the most outstanding wildlife photographers here in the state of Florida. How do you keep your equipment safe on a 100-day trek?
Well, I'm maybe a little more cavalier about that than I should be, but it's like asking a construction worker how they keep their hammer safe on the job site. You have it to use it. I would say I've definitely lost some cameras. We've all lost phones and cameras, different devices to the water invariably throughout these journeys, but it's part of it. If it's not around your neck, you're going to miss that special moment. So you have to have it in your hand and ready to go.
Well, speaking of those special moments, did you run across panther, or did you see the black bears out there? Did you run across much wildlife, and could you give us a story about your interactions with some of these endangered species?
We saw plenty of wildlife sign, but during these expeditions, we're a group of people traveling noisily through the woods, not typically at dawn or dusk, and so I guarantee that panthers and bears saw us, but we did not have direct sightings of panthers anyway. We did see some black bears on the 2018 expedition, which was really exciting because it was showing that these bears were actually expanding their range from what had been previously documented. And Joe Guthrie can tell you more about that.
Mm-hmm. So I take it, did you get permission from the owners of the land, or did you just traverse, Mallory, did you just traverse public land as you're doing these treks across Florida? And did people come up to you and say, what are you doing on my land? And, tell us about what it was like to get permissions.
Yes, all of that was worked out ahead of time, because what's so special is the opportunity to interlink going from public to private land and really getting to travel where other people don't, because the private landowners gave us special permissions for these expeditions. And that allowed us to travel, like wildlife would, without having to worry about the land ownership once we'd secured that permission. So a lot of the landowners, that we worked with were obviously supportive of the mission and supportive of long-term conservation efforts. And some of the properties were in conservation easement. Some of those are hopeful conservation easement acquisitions by the state in the future. So, they were willing for us to highlight their land as we crossed it. And then same with the public land, we got to work with every state and federal land management agency in the planning and executing of these treks. So again, get to highlight all types of land ownership. And really, Florida is blessed with public lands where you can get out and see the wild heart of Florida and do your own mini expeditions.
And Carlton, there's a lot of acreage out there that belongs to ranchers and to agricultural interests, I think it's fair to say they're key to preserving what's great about Wild Florida. They've got to take part in this in order to make sure that Wild Florida survives.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And it's a reminder that we should, for the viewers, just describe the Florida Wildlife Corridor. The state of Florida is approximately 35 million acres of non-water, 35 acres of land, and the Florida Wildlife Corridor is 16 million acres of that, so nearly half of our state. We're benefiting from a tremendous conservation legacy in Florida, where we have 10 million acres of land that is in permanent conservation status, a lot of that public. Within the Florida Wildlife Corridor, it's more than 9 million acres of permanently protected land, but the corridor also has 6 million acres of what we could describe as missing links. And these are lands that are ranches and farms, timber, groves, pieces of the green puzzle, this fabric that unites all the green space in Florida. And you know, that's what's at risk. That's what we have to really focus on. And ranching is a huge part of that. Ranching comprises 5 to 6 million acres of Florida. And you could say that the persistence of ranching in Florida will determine the persistence of animals like the Florida panther, and the recovery of animals like the Florida black bear. So there's a real synergy there where the future of agriculture, the future of wildlife rely on the common thing. And that is investment in this green infrastructure, which is vital to not just wildlife and agriculture, but to every Floridian.
I want to ask this next question to both of you. Mallory, we've got Alligator Alley, which really runs through the heart of the Everglades and in some parts interrupts the water flow of the Everglades. We've also got I-4, which goes through part of the green swamp, that last green thread. Now there's a new proposal to build toll roads through parts of undeveloped Florida or lesser developed Florida. I'm just wondering, what impact do these roads have on trying to protect the wildlife corridor?
Well, roads can be, you know, impactful to wildlife and also to the natural processes. So in the first example you gave there, it's really about the flow of water south to Florida Bay that, you know, can be held up. And so it's both hydrology and wildlife that need to be taken into account in the planning of any new roads. And our Florida Wildlife Corridor Executive Director, Jason Lauritsen, has served on those planning processes so far, the task force for two of the proposed roads, and has become a good partner, you know, our organization with the Department of Transportation, so that we're submitting the science behind wildlife crossings, improved, you know, permeability across roads, existing roads, or any new proposals with protection of the Florida Wildlife Corridor at top of mind. So for anyone who wants to dig into that, you can go to the website, floridawildlifecorridor.org, and you can see all the thousands of miles of roads that do cross the corridor, as well as rivers, trails, and other items of interest.
Carlton, did you want to add anything to that?
Sure. I think it's a great question, and it's actually a similar toll road proposal, the Heartland Expressway in 2006, that inspired me to go found the Florida Wildlife Corridor campaign, because when those toll roads were being discussed in the media, there was discussion of every type of corridor other than wildlife corridors. There was hurricane evacuation corridors, economic development corridors, multimodal transportation corridors, but no discussion of wildlife corridors. And there I had been tracking black bears with Joe Guthrie and thinking, wow, this is coming here, and they're not even talking about this piece of the puzzle. So I think the opportunity for us as Floridians is to look at a proposal like this toll road and use it as a mechanism to think about what is the green space need that's comparable to that. We spend $10 billion year after year on our transportation infrastructure. You're going to have trouble convincing me that we should spend another $20 billion on toll roads if we're not willing to spend and make a robust investment in land conservation and green infrastructure, because these wildlife corridors are the green infrastructure that holds all of Florida together. It's the headwaters of most of the major rivers. It's the source of drinking water for most Floridians. It's the land that serves our agricultural economy, and investing in the conservation easements and the solutions to keep that green space green where the landowners are on list waiting to do it is even more important than our own transportation infrastructure. So if this toll road discussion can elevate and prioritize the importance of the Florida Wildlife Corridor as a public policy, then I think it's really good that we're having this conversation.
Well, Mallory and Carlton, thank you for coming on Florida This Week. We're going to go out with your next documentary, which is going to premiere in January. You're going to show it outdoors all over Florida. This is The Wild Divide. Here's the next documentary from Carlton Ward and Mallory Likes.
Right now, the Florida Wildlife Corridor is being pushed to the breaking point. This backbone here on the Lake Wales Ridge, it's holding the corridor together.
Our challenge is to keep that backbone of the state connected and whole. It's kind of a race against time.
I've never had a cause to fight for that was this big.
The third member of the expedition crew for the Florida Wildlife Corridor is Joe Guthrie. He's hiked through scrub, swamp, and forest from one end of the state to the other. His research on black bears has influenced the designs of many wildlife underpasses on Florida's highways. Joe, welcome to Florida This Week. Nice to see you.
Hi, Rob. Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we just saw a bit of the documentary that suggested that the Lake Wales Ridge is in danger. Why should we be concerned, and what's endangering the Lake Wales Ridge?
Well, the Lake Wales Ridge is a really special geography, and it represents one of the key parts of Florida's wildlife biodiversity and biodiversity writ large. Florida's a biodiversity hotspot, and certainly if you take the Lake Wales Ridge out of Florida, the number of endemic native species that only exist here in Florida would drop off drastically. And so the ridge is this kind of high central relict dune system that, you know, historically back before the Pleistocene was when most of Florida was underwater in a shallow sea, the ridge was exposed. And so there are plants and animals on the Lake Wales Ridge that have been evolving for millions of years in isolation. And there are still remnants of that habitat left somewhere, you know, elsewhere on the Lake Wales Ridge. I want to say that again. There are still remnants of that habitat clinging to existence on the Lake Wales Ridge, and those plants and animals cling to existence there also.
And is it mainly threatened by development and because of the disappearance of citrus? The citrus growers have to sell their land to make some money.
Yeah, it's as the highest and driest part of this section of the peninsula. The ridge habitats were kind of the first places that get developed, first places to have roads built and homes and other infrastructure kind of established there. And so that development chews up a chunk, a large chunk of the Lake Wales Ridge scrub habitat. And so as landscape ecologists, we talk about the conversion and land use change. That's really what we have to think about when we're thinking about trying to conserve pieces of the landscape for these plants and animals. Also, as you lose chunks of habitat, it becomes harder to manage what remains. So as you build subdivisions next to existing conservation land, it becomes harder to manage that conservation land, say with fire, for instance, because you don't want to have prescribed burns taking place right next to a development or a strip mall or a subdivision. And so those kinds of factors compound lack of fire, the proximity to disturbance factors like roads, and makes the, you know, on top of not being able to burn, it makes the existing native habitat vulnerable to invasive species. Mm-hmm. And so there are all kinds of issues that come up as you shrink the kind of envelope in which critters and endangered plants have to live.
Joe, we're almost out of time, but the Wild Divide documentary, we just saw a short trailer for it a few minutes ago. You're going to be showing it in a series of outdoor showings in January. Tell us a little bit about where that's going to be and how people can find out more.
Absolutely. You can go to floridawildlifecorridor.org and find our schedule for when we'll be showing the film between January 24th and January 30th. We'll be doing outdoor, safely socially distanced events in St. Pete, Tampa. I think the finale will be on the 30th at the Heights Shuffleboard Society, where the Florida Wildlife Corridor team, our executive director Jason Lauritsen, will be in attendance there. We'll be able to show this upcoming film, The Wild Divide, which was inspired by our 2019 trek up the Lake Wales Ridge, connecting ranch lands to existing conservation lands like Avon Park Air Force Bombing Range, the Nature Conservancy's wonderful Saddle Blanket Reserve, several of these really important conservation touch points surrounded by ranch land, which is really buffering and providing important conservation land and buffering around some of our existing crown jewels in conservation in Florida.
Joe Guthrie, thank you so much for being on Florida This Week, and thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, and we were talking about the Florida Wildlife Corridor Project with the principal expedition members who've trekked across Florida several times, Carlton Ward Jr., Mallory Leick-Stimmett, and Joe Guthrie, who we heard there last. They've produced a new film. There are several films out about these expeditions, but they've produced a new film called The Wild Divide. And it's going to be shown from January 24th through January 30th at several outdoor locations in St. Petersburg and Tampa. And on the 30th, which is a Saturday night, they'll be there at the Heights, the shuffleboard in the Heights, in Tampa Heights, at an event in the evening to show their film outdoors and give a talk. So that should be really great. Well, if you want to comment about the Florida Wildlife Corridor Project, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Mark from Brandon writes this, thanks for focusing on the subject and these people. To me, they are true Florida heroes. If I were in charge of Florida, taking care of and sustaining the land, the water, and the wildlife, that would be my number one priority. I'm naive because I would imagine that anyone who was born here or moved here would feel the same. But unfortunately, I found out that it's not always the case, writes Mark. And then Leah in Tampa says, is there a way to see the old broadcasts of Florida This Week? Well, yeah, there is. You can just simply go to wedu.org and look for Florida This Week, FTW, and all the old broadcasts are there, including this one from last Friday night with Carlton Ward Jr. and Mallory Leick and Joe Guthrie. And David writes this. He sent in this email that says, thank you so much for bringing these guests on today. I've caught all these documentaries on TV, and they do an excellent job. Yeah, the documentaries are breathtakingly beautiful. If you haven't seen them yet, you should look them up because they are incredible looks at still unspoiled parts of Florida, but parts of Florida that could be rapidly disappearing if we don't do enough to protect them. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Sean, in the next hour, is going to be talking about the continued rise in COVID-19 cases here in Florida. So stick around for that. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a moment and take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I'll just read a few stories from The Wire and see where you want to take the conversation. The Florida Department of Health confirmed more than 6,200 additional cases of COVID-19. This is from Saturday to Sunday. The numbers bring the state's known total number of cases to more than 985,000, so we're just short of 1 million. The state also confirmed 81 new deaths on Saturday, bringing Florida's total during the pandemic to at least 18,442. And Moderna says it will ask the U.S. and European regulators to allow emergency use of its COVID-19 vaccine, as new study results confirm the shots offer strong protection. Multiple vaccine candidates must succeed for the world to stamp out the coronavirus pandemic. Moderna is just behind Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech in seeking to begin vaccinations in the U.S. next month, December, which starts tomorrow. The Massachusetts company revealed the new results today. It says of 196 COVID-19 cases so far in its huge U.S. study, only 11 were trial participants who received the real vaccine. 30 people got severely ill, and all of them got the placebo. So I hope I'm reading that right. 30 people got severely ill, and I think all of those who got severely ill got the placebo, so they didn't get the real vaccine. 813-239-9663. President-elect Joe Biden will have an all-female communications team at his White House, led by campaign communications director Kate Bedingfeld. Bedingfeld will serve as Biden's White House communications director, and Jen Psaki, longtime Democratic spokeswoman, will be his press secretary. The choices reflect Biden's stated desire to build out a diverse White House team, as well as what's expected to be a return to a more traditional press operation. Meanwhile, the Associated Press has learned that Biden is also planning to name the president and CEO of the Center for American Progress, Neera Tanden, as director of the Office of Management and Budget. But there's been pushback from the Republicans on that, who must agree to confirm her in Senate confirmation hearings. So that may be in trouble. That nomination may be in trouble. Congress is returning to Washington for one last attempt at deal-making this year. The only absolute must-do is preventing a government shutdown on December 11th. But lawmakers are also debating whether or not to deliver another round of coronavirus relief before President Trump leaves office. A virus bill would provide funding for vaccines and testing, for reopening schools, and for helping small businesses. But the parties remain divided on the details and the cost. Failure to pass a measure would push virus aid to the top of President-elect Joe Biden's legislative agenda when he takes office in the third week in January. 813-239-9663. And a top Iranian security official says Israel used electronic devices to remotely kill an Iranian nuclear scientist. Ali Shamkhani, the secretary of the country's Supreme National Security Council, made the comments today to Iranian state television at the funeral for the scientist, Mohsen Farizadeh. His remarks drastically changed the story of Farizadeh's killing, which took place on Friday. Authorities initially said that a truck exploded and then gunmen opened fire on the scientist, killing him. Israel has been suspected of killing Iranian nuclear scientists over the past 10 years. It has repeatedly declined to comment on the attacks on the killings. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj at wmnf.org. Well, over the weekend on CNN, there was an interesting exchange. We're going to play it right now. This has been between Fareed Zakaria, who hosts a show on CNN on Sunday mornings, and Nigel Ferguson, who's a pretty prominent conservative historian. And Fareed Zakaria fact-checked him several times during this interview, during this program. They were looking back at the election of President-elect Joe Biden, and let's listen to how the fact-checking went.
Neil, what do you think is the message in Biden being elected, Trump being denied a second term, but the Senate apparently staying Republican, the Democrats not doing so well in the House? Make sense of that.
Well, I'm going to disagree with your monologue, Fareed, which I know is very presumptuous of me, but actually what you said seemed to contradict itself. You began by saying the country was deeply divided, and then you went on to show that actually when you look at voting, it cut across racial divisions quite clearly. And I'd argue that this election is actually been the victory of the center, running against a great deal of media commentary, some of it yours, that foresaw a constitutional crisis, if not an outright civil war. This election wasn't the 1860 election that led to civil war after Lincoln's victory. It wasn't 1876 when a bunch of states sent rival electors to Washington and the whole thing ended up being stitched up in a rather seamy deal. In fact, for me, the most surprising thing is that you had highest turnout since 1900. 300, both sides successfully mobilizing voters, but the country collectively voted for the center ground.
Neil, let me ask you about the Republican Party, and this is why I would persist in saying that the country is polarized. You have now, by the latest polls, 77% of the Republican Party that believes that this election was fraudulent and that Joe Biden stole it. You have a situation where Donald Trump is, without any question, the dominant figure in the Republican Party, even after having lost an election.
Well, let's remember, Fareed, that many Democrats felt that way, not only about the 2016 election, but about the 2000 election. So it's not like it's the first time that the losers have said the election was stolen. The Democrats spent 4 years trying to find evidence that Vladimir Putin was responsible for Donald Trump's election and failed to find it. So I think we shouldn't exaggerate what we are seeing here.
I just want to do a factual point. Neil mentioned that Democrats also, after 2016, thought the elections were rigged. I just checked it. About 30% of Democrats thought the election was rigged or fraudulent. There, it is now, as I said, about 75 to 80% of Republicans who believe that. So I do think that is a difference.
All right. So that was Fareed Zakaria yesterday on CNN fact-checking conservative historian Neil Ferguson and whether or not Democrats for 4 years have been saying that the 2016 election was stolen, and compared to the number of Republicans that think that this current election, the 2020 election, was stolen. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. So we could talk about the efforts to preserve wild Florida, and we could talk about some of the news that's happened in the last 24 hours. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. When you try to keep information low or secret, you often times make the news on a holiday weekend or just before a holiday weekend, because oftentimes the news is lost as people celebrate and relax and have dinner with family and don't read the newspaper and don't watch much TV. And here's a story that a few years ago, this was really big on Fox News, that allegedly a Democratic staffer had been killed because he had some inside information about the WikiLeaks release of emails of Hillary Clinton. And this was, at least on Fox News, 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, a really big story. Fox, especially the nighttime host, kept claiming that this Democratic staffer, Seth Rich, was intentionally murdered to keep him quiet about the WikiLeaks revelations. And then Fox News backed off of the story, and then finally, last week, quietly, settled with the family and agreed that it had made a mistake. And so let's listen to a report about that. This is from the Associated Press.
Fox News will have to pay a settlement to the family of a slain Democratic National Committee employee. Authorities in Washington, D.C. say 27-year-old Seth Rich was shot to death in 2016 in what they called a botched robbery attempt. But that wasn't the news that Fox News followers were getting. Rich's parents, Joel and Mary, sued over a Fox article and commentary that their son had leaked DNC emails to WikiLeaks. A lower court threw out the case, but an appeals court reinstated it, and in the end, Fox settled. Details on how much of a settlement weren't disclosed. In a statement, Rich's parents say they hope the settlement will make the media more careful in the future. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Well, that happened late last week. That settlement was announced just before the Thanksgiving holiday. And I'm just wondering if you were reading the newspaper over the weekend or if you were watching television over the weekend, whether or not you saw that story. I mean, the best time to, if you want to downplay a story, you make the news just before a holiday weekend. And I think that's pretty big news that Fox paid the family of Seth Rich a settlement. Now, the family can't talk about it, but they were essentially agreeing, Fox News was agreeing, that its story was false and wrong. The family had complained about the emotional hardship on them as their son was mentioned over and over again for weeks on Fox News or months or even years on Fox News. Well, finally, Fox News backed away from the story. And what do you make of that? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Also, as I was talking to the Florida Wildlife Corridor people, I asked them about this proposal to build these three new giant toll roads through Florida. One would connect Polk County with Collier County. Another would extend the Florida Turnpike to the Suncoast Expressway. And another would move the Suncoast Expressway or extend it from just north of the Tampa Bay area all the way to the Georgia line. Pretty big project. There have been a series of hearings about it, even though the COVID crisis has made it hard to attend the hearings. At those hearings, it's been clear that the public is against building these toll roads. We heard Carlton Ward speak out against them just a moment ago. There was a very interesting op or editorial in the Tampa Bay Times against the toll roads. The decision will be up to the legislature and the governor, and it's coming up quick. So what do you make? I mean, do you live in one of those areas that would be affected by the toll roads, and do you need that toll road? I mean, especially if you live in Hardy County or Eastern Manatee County, if you live in Polk County and you want a quick way to go to Collier County, you might like the toll road, or maybe not. If you live in the countryside that would be affected by the toll road, maybe you don't think it's a good idea. We'd like to hear from you. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Let's go to the phones, and we'll go to Francisco in Sarasota. Hey, Francisco, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Yes, hi, Rob. I wanted to comment on two things quickly. The equivalency that the sort of conservatives want to make about Democrats believing that the 2000 election was stolen or the 2016 and making an equivalency with the 2020 election that we just had. In 2000, Al Gore lost supposedly by 500 votes in a state that his brother, that George Bush's his opponent's governor, ran the state. In 2016, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. So in a sense, the will of the people was not represented. So it's this constant equivalency that they want to make that goes back to, Clinton had sex in the Oval Office, so everything that Trump did was negated with the whataboutism argument. And so it's just ridiculous, and it's just another example of how truth and facts are irrelevant to this group. The second thing I want to say quickly is we have to get rid of the Electoral College. I said after the last election that a president would get 7 to 8 million more votes and still lose the presidential election. It almost happened this time. If Trump had gotten 50,000 more votes in three states combined, he possibly could have won the election with losing the popular vote by 6 or 7 million votes. So this is only going to get worse, and this topic has to be spoken about more, and something has to be done.
There is that national compact where states individually around the country are passing a law saying that if the majority of people in their state, or rather a majority of people in the country, rather, vote for candidate A, regardless of what the Electoral College says or is supposed to say, they're going to appoint electors that will support the winner of the national vote, not the winner of the vote in their state. And there is this national compact, and the legislature in Florida has not signed on to the national compact, but there are a bunch of states that have signed on to that national compact. So instead of amending the Constitution, this is a way around it, so you don't have to amend the Constitution, which is a more difficult path.
Right. Yeah. I understand that, but the likelihood of any red state joining that compact is very low, and without some red states joining, I believe that it's very difficult to get to the 270. I would like to make one other point, And I know this is all, we have to, the Founding Fathers stuff, but even the Senate, the senatorial representation is all askew. The Democrats represent, the Democratic senators represent about 20 million more people than the Republican senators, yet the Republicans have control of the Senate, which creates the law, you know, creates the judges, creates a whole climate of governance in the United States. So, you know, what was good in 1776 or 1787 doesn't necessarily mean it's good for the country today as it exists.
Yeah, it was a way to buy off the slave states to make them
exactly. The
agricultural and slave states. It's a good point. We should discuss it more, and I agree. Francisco, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
All right, great. Thanks for making those points. If you want to make a point, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Patrick writes this regarding Fareed Zakaria's show. I saw that show and thought that the conservative historian was full of it. I didn't need Fareed's fact check to know it. Hillary Clinton called the orange idiot at 3 a.m. This is Patrick's words Wednesday and conceded. Conservatism means nothing more than lying, cheating, distorting, greed, selfishness. Compare Neil Ferguson to Doris Goodwin and John Meacham. The whole movement should go down the john like all good piles. Well, that's Patrick. Pretty angry. Thank you, Patrick, for your email. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. David writes this. I did not know about the Seth Rich story. I'm glad you mentioned it here. I don't even recall seeing this on CNN, but they should cover it. Yeah, they did not cover it. At least I watched about an hour and a half of CNN over the weekend, and I did not see them cover it. They may have covered it. Kevin writes this, one thing different between the Democrats losing in 2016 or 2000, the Democratic candidates conceded the election. Trump will never concede. His ego will not permit it. There's now a lot of talk about President Trump perhaps announcing that he's going to run for president again in 2024 on Inauguration Day, January 20th, and trying to overshadow or preempt Joe Biden's speech, whatever kind of speech Joe Biden makes at the inauguration, that Trump will announce he's going to run for president. If you're a Republican, I think it's a good idea that Donald Trump run again in 2024. Lots of reports coming out of the White House suggest that he will run again in 2024. What does that do to your party if you're a Republican? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Jeanette, who's in Gulfport. Hi, Jeanette. You're on MNF. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hi, I just wanted to say that those toll roads are completely without merit. We don't need them, and it's cruelty and environmental destruction, and it's wrong. And we're going to not have any more Black Panthers to call our state animal very soon.
Yeah, the Florida Panther would be directly impacted by the path of at least one of those roadways. Jeanette, why do you think there's such a move, though? There's a big group of people, including the road builders and others, and many people inside the legislature that think it's a good idea.
Because they probably want to develop all the land around the roads, make the state a just concrete jungle.
And
so they can promote business.
Jeanette, were you born here or did you move here?
I moved here.
Yeah, and what attracted you to Florida at first? What was the thing that made you want to live here?
The weather.
Yeah. And what about the land?
I was in California before I moved here, and it wasn't warm enough in California.
Well, California's
so
pretty beautiful. Yeah.
It is, and they take much better care of their environment.
How so? When you say that, why? How would you compare what they do in California to what we do here?
Well, they care about car emissions. They care about, you know, their green spaces. They have planners when they do decide to do a residential area. They're going to make sure that they're not impacting so much on the environment that it destroys wildlife. I mean, I'm not saying California is perfect, but at least they care about wildlife.
Yeah, California is beautiful, and there are many great parks out there in California. Well,
it is much more beautiful and much more calm there, too.
Well, you make me wonder why you moved here from California, though. I mean, it is warmer here, but sometimes it's way too hot.
Yeah, it is way too hot. But the thing is that I kept getting pneumonia, and I kept saying, well, I got to live somewhere warmer. So that's why I got here. But, yeah, my family's all back in California. It's kind of hard.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. All right.
It's very sad to watch what they're doing to the wildlife and the wild spaces in the corridors here.
All right, Jeanette, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you. Bev writes this, in the late 1990s, a friend was lured to Spring Hill to buy a house in a new development. The Suncoast Expressway, which was not even completed at the time, was a huge selling point by the developers. That should tell you who wants the proposed expressways built or extended. They are not for the residents already in the area. Yeah, I wonder how the Suncoast Expressway has changed life in places like Pasco County, if you've noticed a change in your life. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. I've been asking people what they think about the proposal to build new toll roads through Florida. We've been talking about that. We've been talking about the Seth Rich case, which was finally settled by Fox News, but there was almost no media coverage of the settlement. We did have a report that we played earlier from the Associated Press, and also we've been talking a little bit about President Trump and the way he's handled the election outcome. And some people have very strong opinions about the way the president has handled the election outcome. And if you've got a comment or a thought, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us at 813-239-9663. In the next hour, Sean Canaan is going to host a program, the Midpoint Program, and he's going to be talking about the COVID crisis, and he'll be bringing along a doctor from Tampa General Hospital who's an expert, one of the local experts on the COVID crisis. So stick around. I think he's going to take phone calls, so you'll be able to call up with your question about COVID-19. And thanks a lot for listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to make a difference by giving instead of buying this holiday season, WMNF is taking part in Giving Tuesday, when we'll be asking for your support for the radio station during the season of commerce. Giving Tuesday is tomorrow, December 1st. You don't have to wait until then to give, though. You can go online right now to WMNF.org. Or you can call us at 813-238-8001 and make a donation so your dollars can have a big impact on your community. And thank you very much. So we'll be celebrating Giving Tuesday tomorrow, along with all the other local and national nonprofits. And it's a good day after going through this buying spree that some people have gone through. It's a good day to give back to local charities that you really care about. Giving Tuesday is tomorrow. You can always make a donation to WMNF by going to WMNF.org and making your donation there. Well, stay tuned for the news. This is WMNF in Tampa, and I'm Rob Lori. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about the impact of the COVID crisis on businesses. And we'll look at the lack of a federal bailout for businesses and for employees. We'll be talking about that on the first part of tomorrow's program. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland.